morning, everybody. Good morning. Rowdy bunch. Everybody's obviously excited about starting the new semester of Sunday school. I think you are. You're in here chatting, excited. It must be about the class, right? Something like that. Well, why don't we go ahead and begin our new Sunday school semester with a word of prayer. Father in heaven, surely the nations are like a drop in the bucket. They are regarded as dust on your scales. You weigh the nations as though they were fine dust. You sit enthroned above the circle of the earth, and its people are like grasshoppers. You bring princes to naught. You reduce the rulers of this world to nothing. No sooner are they planted, no sooner are they sown, no sooner do they take root in the ground than you blow on them and they wither, and a whirlwind sweeps them away like chaff. Lord, there is none like you. You are sovereign. Lord, your sovereignty, you tell us to trust in you because you are sovereign. You tell us that those who are weary, you will give strength. You will increase the power of the weak. Those who hope in the Lord will renew their strength. They will soar on wings like eagles. They will run and not grow weary and walk and not be faint. Lord, these are wearisome times often in our day and age and in our society and our public life. And I just pray that you would, through the course of study we're going to take in the coming weeks, I pray that you would renew our strength, that you would renew our trust in you. You are the sovereign God who lifts nations up and tears them down. Lord, help us to trust and hope in you and to always look to you. We pray this in the name of the Lord of Lords and the King of Kings, Jesus. Amen. Well, welcome everybody. Come on in for those of you who are still in the back. As I say, welcome to the fall semester of Rocky Mountain Community Church's Sunday School Hour. I'm happy to see so many of you here. This is an excellent turnout. Trudy says it's the first Sunday, so I think the real test will come next week. See if you guys, can make it here. You want to wire me up?
Can you hear in the back?
Wire me up? All right. We're going to take a pause here and get wired up. Something like that.
Here. Just put this right here. Coat on. Do it on my belt.
Should have thought of that before, huh?
Well,
I can't see because I took my glasses off.
There you go.
All right, now I'm wired up. You guys hear me?
Yeah.
All right. Well, since there are so many of you here, and I don't know everybody, and I'm not sure it's certain that everybody knows me, but let me go ahead and introduce myself. My name's Brian Mattson. I'm a lifelong member here at Rocky. And in my day job, I am I serve as the senior scholar of public theology for the Center for Cultural Leadership, which is a nonprofit Christian think tank out of Northern California. And so that job entails reading and writing and speaking and doing that sort of thing. And as part of my duties as the senior scholar of public theology, I've been undertaking a foray this year into politics. What is public theology? Public theology is just doing theology out loud. Okay? Doing theology out loud where the world can hear, rather than just in our small church environment in the congregation on Sunday morning. Public theology is going out into the public square and saying, hey, God has something to say about this. So I wrote a book this year called Politics and Evangelical Theology, and this is a book that says God has something to say about politics. This book is available, will be available, at the Book Nook. Now, I think that Claris has some copies available there.
I do.
Claris just got some copies available. When she sells out, and if she sells out, what we're going to do is have a sign-up sheet where you can put your name down, and then she can order them in bulk. And she's selling them, Claris, you're selling these for $11. $11 a copy. I mean, what a bargain, right? I mean, that's amazing. That's a bargain. So this is a book that I wrote this year, and much of this class, if things start to sound familiar to you, it could be that you've already read the book. If they're familiar to you and you haven't read the book, you're a genius. But maybe it won't be familiar to you. I do promise I'm not going to stand up here and read the book to you. In fact, the nature of this class, those of you who are familiar with my teaching, you'll find that this class is a little bit different than normal. Usually I come prepared with a lengthy manuscript and I stand up here and I lecture, or in other words, talk at you. For about 45 minutes. But I'm hoping that this class is going to be a little bit more casual and will produce a lot more interaction. So don't be afraid in this class to just raise your hand, stop me, and fire off some you know, intensely important question. And we'll get some great political brawls going in here, I'm sure. No, we'll try not to do that. So I'm not going to read to you from my book. I'm not just going to lecture from the manuscript. I've got a page of notes and things that I want to cover, and I'm going to cover them, but I hope hopefully we'll be able to have a little bit of audience participation. In fact, let's do a little bit of audience participation. I just began by praying through Isaiah chapter 40, all about how God renews the strength of the weary. So let me ask this question. How many of you are weary of politics? That's a good number. Weary of politics. All right, let me ask this question. How many people here hate politics? That could be for any reason. It could be an aspect of politics that you hate. Is there something about politics that just really grates on you and you hate politics? Okay, there's a few. Now, audience participation, why? Tell me. Fire it out there. Why? Give me some reasons. Yada, 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 yada. Political advertising. They lie. Everyone lies. Greg.
Take a different position.
Pardon?
Those attitudes are reflective of us not being involved. All that stuff should be water off a duck's back if we're engaged.
Okay, so that stuff shouldn't bother us. If we're engaged, then all of that stuff we could just ignore. You said water off a duck's back. And so that shouldn't bother us, you're saying. Okay. Any other reasons why people might hate politics? I mean, we've kind of covered it. They lie, the advertising. You know.
Corruption.
Very good. Doug.
Because it does bother you.
Because it does bother you.
Well, it should.
Yeah. So all these things shouldn't bother you. These things shouldn't bother you, but they do bother you, and therefore you hate politics because it makes you uncomfortable. Anything else? Well, there's a reason to hate politics. Politics are divisive. I mean, man, once you get into a political discussion with somebody, things, blood pressure goes up, hair starts standing up on the back of your head. That's a reason to hate politics. John?
I think the thing that gets me is we're taught as believers to be first person, to be... If you don't know this person, if you have hearsay going on, you know, we're taught that, you go to that person,
right,
talk to them firsthand. You can't do that with politics. You can't do that with something. You don't know any of those people, really.
There's no private confrontation that goes on.
You can't really know. I mean, honestly, you don't know that person from anyone else. You've got titles and everything else, but you don't really know them, so you don't really know what's going on.
Yeah. So it bothers you that politics is public. And it's being done in public, and you don't really know the person, but you kind of feel compelled to maybe criticize the person, and you're saying, I mean, there's none of this. Matthew 18 doesn't apply to the public square, right? Okay.
Well, and also, just because everything, you don't know about politicians personally, they've got advertising going on, it's whatever their agents want you to see. Mm-hmm. You have all of America's opinions. All you see are opinions. You don't see that specific person. How are you supposed to understand that person and support that person for what you think they believe if you only hear opinions?
How do you cut through the media tested, focus group tested spoonfuls if they're spoon feeding you, right? That's a reason to hate politics. Doug.
But still. Also, there's so much done in private that you don't know about, that you have no control about. You think there's some other hand in there that's guiding things beyond popular opinion.
Yeah, the prospect of conspiracy, that we're not getting the real story. Andrew, in the back.
During Mitt Romney's acceptance speech, he cried about his kids.
Mitt Romney cried about his kids. Yeah. Yeah, that's not contrived, exactly. Yeah, this stuff's focus tested, people, it is. Okay, so those are reasons to hate politics, and I actually agree with almost all of them. Now, next bit of audience participation. Who here loves politics? Who cannot get enough? Talk radio listeners, come on. Come on, you know who you are. All day long. Rush, Hannity, Beck, come on, you guys.
O'Reilly.
Do we even get his radio station here? I don't know.
TV, Fox News.
Okay, so, yeah. What do we love about politics? Come on, give me some things we love about politics. Anybody? Right here, Charlie.
It's interesting.
It is interesting.
It's a blood sport.
That's true.
I recognize that we really do have a say in the government that we've got, and being knowledgeable about what we're doing requires that you listen to a variety of opinions and gather information from a variety of places, and that takes time.
Yeah, we have a say, and that's amazing. Sometimes it's very easy to forget. We are so rare in the history of the human race that we actually have a say in who our leaders are, and it's exciting that we can educate ourselves and actually inform ourselves and have a say. Maribel.
I was going to say ideology, worldview. I think that's what I like.
You like politics because of ideology and worldview. It's definitely ripe territory to apply a worldview. We'll talk about that later. You like politics because there's much at stake. That's true. Yeah, there seems to be a lot at stake. And that kind of ramps up the excitement of things. That's true.
I like how complex they are.
Politics is complex. Charlie likes that. Good. Star.
It's the only thing on TV that engages the mind.
The only thing on TV that engages the mind, sister, and you are probably, very probably right. I'm sure there's some other shows that are kind of brainy, but yeah, that's true. Although I have to say, I watch the Talking Heads shows, and they're not engaging my mind. Very rarely are they engaging my mind. Okay, so those are some reasons people love politics. Okay, how many of you are politically well-informed? Would you consider yourself to be well-informed? Okay. Kind of a distinct minority there. How many of you would consider yourselves ill-informed? Like, don't pay attention, have no clue, don't know who Mitt Romney is. Okay.
I don't think they're in this class.
There wasn't many hands there for ill-informed. How about marginally informed? How about you're kind of middle of the road, you're average, you pay attention? Okay, that's a little better. Have we covered everybody? Is there any other category I'm missing here?
Don't care.
How many just absolutely do not care? My big sister says she doesn't care. I don't believe that for a minute. Okay, well, that's great. I just wanted to get a gauge and get a feel for, you know, what kind of an audience I'm dealing with. I myself am what I call a very high-end news consumer. Okay, I consume a lot of stuff. I mean, even in the writing of this book, I consume a lot of information about politics. I read a lot of material. And so sometimes I find myself thinking, well, everybody knows that. Don't they know that? Don't they know that? No, they don't know that because people are not reading as voraciously as I am. So I'm going to not assume anything. Now that I know that many of you think you're marginally informed, some of you think that you're ill-informed, I'm just going to go ahead and tell you things. And if you're a high-end news consumer, then you get to hear it again. Okay, so I want to talk about the church and politics. This is a fairly unique sort of class in Reformed Presbyterian circles. Most churches would not touch a topic like this with a 10-foot pole. There are other evangelical churches where this is all too common. In fact, all they do is politics on Sunday. I remember one year I was in Southern California, and Carrie, you were there, right? Carrie was there. We went to Saddleback Church in Southern California. This is Rick Warren's church. You know, I happen to really kind of like Rick Warren, so I don't want to be too hard on him. And in his defense, we did show up on the 4th of July. And I knew that this was going to go south when the prelude kicked in. And a banjo started playing. This land is your land. This land is my land. From California. And the whole worship service was patriotic rah, rah, rah American songs. Now, I don't think Rick Warren does that every single week, but that's a church that probably is a little bit too enthusiastic about politics. We're going to talk in more detail next week about two common mistakes I think that we can make as Christians about politics. One is exactly what I just talked about, making politics a top priority, talking about it all the time, having a preacher get up and talk about, you know, the abortion and same-sex marriage every Sunday and over-prioritize. The kinds of churches that think that the answer to every political question is found in the Bible. I think we're going to see not every political question finds an answer that you can read off the pages of the Bible. So we have an over-politicizing in some segments of the evangelical church. But I think that in our circles, kind of in the Reformed Presbyterian circles, we have the opposite problem, and that is we just don't touch politics at all. Politics are irrelevant. They're just not what the church is about, and so we're not going to talk about them. We're going to talk about that in detail next week. Why wouldn't the church talk about politics? Well, I think it's because politics are very personal. They're very passionate, and they are potentially very divisive. I'm sure that most of you have been in a conversation about politics, and people get heated. People have very, very strong convictions about things. And if we have a forum like this where the church is going to teach something about politics, we may insult people. You know, Pastor Tim Keller in New York City, Redeemer Presbyterian Church, he won't touch politics. He will not talk about politics. He just says, no, it's not my job. It's beyond my pay grade. I am just not going to talk about politics. He has good reason for that. He pastors a large burgeoning church in New York City. Okay. There are thousands of people in New York City in his church, and he says, yeah, I'm going to prioritize just preaching the gospel and you know, basic Christian discipleship, and we're just not going to talk about politics. I think that's an overreaction. I think that that's a mistake. But he realizes this is really explosive. This is very divisive. So I'm thankful to Rocky Mount Community Church giving me the opportunity to teach this class, having the willingness to say, hey, we should do something like this. This is an election year that's pretty momentous. It's in the news everywhere. This is where we're living in our world. So let's talk about politics. I'm pretty sure Rocky Mount Community Church is a 501c3 not-for-profit organization. So I'm not going to endorse any candidates for you or tell you who to vote for in this class. But if you can't figure out by the time we're done kind of where I stand on things, then you're either I'm the worst communicator in the world or you'll be hopeless. So just pay attention. Here's what we got to keep in mind then. Politics is explosive, it's divisive, we can bicker and have arguments. Here's something that we need to keep in mind. We have to keep in mind priorities. Okay, what are our priorities? The priorities of the church are word and sacrament, preaching and teaching the Bible, and having the congregation, the people of God, gathered together in the corporate assembly and being strengthened by the sacraments, by the word and sacrament. The gospel, the salvation of sinners, is the top priority for the church. Politics, what's going on in terms of electoral politics right now, is lower on the priority list of the church. Now, here's the problem. So the church has this priority. It's going to be the gospel, and everything else is subordinate to that. Here's the problem. We live our lives 6 days out of the week, not in this room. We're out there in the public square. We have the radio on. I'm so-and-so, and I approve this message. Ad nauseum, all day long, this is what we hear. The world's priority right now is who's going to get elected on November 6th? Who's leading in the polls? Man, what would this country's headed off a cliff? Oh no, this is the right direction for the country. That's what the world's priority is, and that's where we live 6 days out of the week. And so it's not surprising that our priorities start to get shaped and warped a little bit by what the world prioritizes. Now, maybe you don't think that's true. Let me give you a little test. Okay, I do not like this test. I'll tell you, I don't like this test. But I'm going to give you the test, and it's as much a test for me, an indictment on myself. Here's a test. Do you find yourself talking as often and as excitedly and as passionately about Jesus as you do Barack Obama? I hate that test. No, if you took a tape recorder and you followed me around, the conversations that I get into, that I'm most excited about these days, are political conversations. Oh, did you see what so-and-so did? Did you read so-and-so's article? That's what energizes me. That's what gets me fired up. That's where my passion is. And I ask a question like this. Am I nearly as passionate about Jesus as I am politics? Probably not. How about you? Anybody? And is anybody more excited? Do they find themselves more excited about the gospel and Jesus and talking about it more often than they do politics? Anybody here? Excellent. Pastors and church planners don't count. You don't count. You're one of those people that does not live your life 6 days of the week outside of the small days. Okay. Very good. Okay, so we've got to really check ourselves when I ask that question. I say, yeah, the world is definitely shaping my priorities. So let's reshape our priorities. So that's all just to say we need to grow. We need to mature. We've got to grow up. And I'm hoping that this class will be definitely a means of grace in that regard, helping us grow, be sanctified, and for Jesus' priorities to be our priorities. So may God help us reorient our priorities. Politics and worldview. Politics might be low on the church's priority list, but it's still on the priority list because the Christian faith is a world and life view. It gives us basic, bedrock, foundational convictions about the way the world is. What is reality? Who are we? Where did we come from? What condition do we find ourselves in? Where are we headed? What are God's plans? Is there a design to the universe? Is it all just chaos? Those are the sorts of ultimate questions that everybody has some kind of an implicit answer to. And whatever's providing that sort of implicit answer is a worldview. It's a framework or a matrix by which they interpret the world. A worldview is like the pair of glasses that you wear. It's the frame that you look through. If your glasses are tinted, everything you see is going to be that color. Okay? So if you have a worldview, it's going to change the way that you see things. That includes politics. It includes political issues. People do not just, even though it seems that they do, they don't examine political questions and whatever the issues of the day are by taking them one by one. I'm just going to listen to this issue. I'm going to evaluate its merits and decide, I like this guy's jobs plan. I like his jobs plan. Oh, but then there's this candidate over here, and I really like what he says about a woman's right to choose. So I'll take it on its merits and just decide it. People don't decide things one by one. They have a worldview that's going to shape everything they see, every question that they go to. So politics involves life, the universe, and everything. Politics is the art of living communally together. How are we going to get along? How are we going to advance common interests? Well, there's a lot of worldview questions involved in that. What we're going to try to do in this class is develop a biblical worldview. I mean, we want the Bible to be that thing that's providing the spectacles. We want to look through a biblical perspective so that when we see an issue, we have a way to organize it and understand it in biblical categories. So that's what we're going to try to do. What I do in the book and what I'll try to do in this class is give you some general hooks to hang things on. When a politician promises you this, you need to think, now, where does that fit kind of in a biblical worldview? I'm going to try to give you some tools for, well, here's the category. What is he really saying about human life? What is he saying about sexual matters or human flourishing or economics? What is he really saying about money? What does the Bible teach us about money? So whatever the issues are, the social issues, economic issues, foreign policy issues even, we need some biblical hooks to hang things on, and that's what we're going to try to do. It's going to help us. Having a self-conscious worldview will help us make sense of the dizzying differences in policy proposals. Dizzying differences. Now, a lot of times you will hear people talk about, politicians especially, petty partisan differences. Have you ever heard that term? We need to lay aside our petty partisan differences and come together. Now, invariably, what the politician means by that is, my opponent needs to stop opposing me and get on board with my program, and then we'll all be all-inclusive and we'll get over our petty partisan differences. You got to understand. You need to learn to translate the rhetoric. Petty partisan differences are the differences between parties petty?
No.
Okay, people think they're not petty. Sometimes I would say it depends, right? Sometimes they are petty. Sometimes people are just playing politics and there's no real substance behind it. Here's what I would like to convey in this class. Some would like you to believe that every political question is a petty partisan difference, that there's nothing really important behind it. Actually, what we have in politics more often is a collision of entire worldviews. We have people who see the world in a certain way meeting people who see the world in a completely different way, and we are colliding. And we're not going to resolve the political differences by simply talking about the topic itself. Talking about the topic itself is not going to help us resolve the problem. We got to dig beneath that. Say, why do you see it that way? Here's why I see it this way. People want to have common ground. They want to build bridges. Here's the problem. Too often, common ground in building bridges means ignoring the differences. Let's say we have a giant canyon or a gorge, and we want to build a bridge across it. Would it be a good idea to start building a bridge if you had no idea the distance between one side and the other? Let's say, you know, this is a long bridge. We're going to have to put pylons down the chasm into bedrock if we're going to build the bridge. Could you build the bridge if you had no idea how deep that gorge was? No, you couldn't. Finding common ground with people of opposing worldviews is like trying to build a bridge with them. But it isn't helpful at the end of the day to try to build a bridge or try to have common ground if you have no idea how far the distance is. If you have no idea how deep the chasm is between your worldviews. So talking about the differences first is going to help. Getting behind the real worldview collision and the worldview clash. And I think once people realize, yes, that's my worldview. I'm self-conscious about it. Now we're going to get somewhere in the discussion. Now we can evaluate our worldviews. Is my worldview right? Am I really interpreting this rightly? Okay? So common ground coming together cannot be at the expense of recognizing the real differences. Al Mohler, Southern Baptist professor at, I believe it's Southeastern Seminary, Southwestern Seminary, came out with a piece this week. It was a very, very good article on how the coming election is a worldview election, commenting on how divergent and how polarized and partisan the parties have become. He said, really, we have two different worldviews that are being offered here. There's a deep chasm. This is a worldview election. And here's the important thing. He says this is not a worldview election about the worldview of Barack Obama and Mitt Romney. He says this is a worldview test for America. I mean, who do we think we are? That's really what's at stake here. It was an excellent piece, just calling to attention that there are giant worldview clashes going on. We tend to treat political questions, and politicians want you to treat political questions as individual, discrete, one-by-one issues. I was just talking about that. I like his jobs plan. I like his position on reproductive health. Like they're just individual, unrelated questions. And on the surface, things seem that way. I mean, why would that issue have anything to do with this issue? They're just one-by-one, and we'll just take them one-by-one. Well, they cannot be one-by-one issues that can be taken in a discrete manner. Because ask yourself this question. Why do the same people line up on opposite sides of every political question? Just think about that for a second. Pro-choice. Abortion, reproductive health. There's an issue. Think in your mind, who lines up on that question? Okay. Oil and natural gas drilling. Okay, we're pretty far afield. These are two topics that don't have anything to do with each other, we wouldn't think. I want you to imagine in your mind now, who lines up on the opposite sides of that question? How can that be a coincidence? I mean, if political issues are really just one by one, I'll evaluate it on its merits, then it's impossible that the same people would line up on opposite sides of those two questions. The great economist at Stanford, Thomas Sowell, pointed this out in a really great book that he wrote called Conflict of Visions. And he realized this cannot be a coincidence that you have the same people lined up on opposite sides of every political question. The same people. He says it can't be a conspiracy. Think about it. People didn't gather together and say, okay, here's our list of things that we're all going to line up on. People just kind of instinctively are taking the opposite views of all of these things. And Sowell realizes that it's because of a worldview. There's a view of the world that's making people interpret totally unrelated issues in a common way. They're not individual issues. Political issues are not individual things like a tree. We have a tree over here and a tree over here, and I can examine that one and I can examine this one. Political issues are like a forest. And all the trees, roots are going deep. And it's a deep, networked, interlocking root system. And so to really get at the bottom of political issues, we've got to understand the root system. That's what we're going to try to do in this class. A libertarian outfit by the name of Reason.TV, sent a correspondent out to the Democratic National Convention last week and got a number of delegates to speak with him on camera. And so his first question was, ma'am or sir, are you pro-choice? And that's the first question he asked to every single one of them. Are you pro-choice? Absolutely, 100%. I am in favor of a woman choosing to do what she wants with her own body. Very, very aggressive, emphatic. I am pro-choice. And so the next question was, well, there's been a lot of talk about soft drinks and banning trans fats. You know, Mayor Bloomberg in New York City has now banned a soft drink over 16 ounces. So would you be in favor of people just having a choice to choose what soft drink they want? No! I mean, no, because we pay a lot of money for fat people. And then he asked, he goes through, he's like, now would you be... He asked one lady, would you be in favor of a person having a choice whether to join a union? And she says, yeah, I think I would. He says, oh, really, you like the right to work? Oh, no. No, I don't like the right to work states. No, absolutely not. She goes, very interesting. She treated the question as an individual tree, as an individual issue. And the guy asked her the question just as an isolated thing. Is it okay that a person chooses whether to be in a union? Yeah, that sounds reasonable. And then she remembered, oh, wait a minute, no. Interlocking roots, I'm not for right to work. No, we can't do that. Very interesting. Interesting. Video showing the worldview and also showing really the incoherence a lot because it went on and on about various issues. Would you be in favor of people choosing what school their children go to? Oh, absolutely not. We're not in favor. We're just not in favor of that. But the lady even says we have a lot of people who are really ignorant. I mean, we know better for them what's good for their children. We just can't have people doing that. So how pro-choice are you? How pro-choice are you? They're not individual questions. How they believe in one, how a person believes in one is going to affect a whole litany of other issues. And it was person after person after person answered the questions identically, except for the lady who made the slip-up. But she recovered and entered back into the tent of orthodoxy. So political issues are clusters of related things. They're like a forest. There's entire worldviews behind them. And in the coming weeks, we're going to explore those worldviews. Next week, we're going to get into that, but we're going to start with the two common mistakes that Christians make about politics. One, it's all about politics. And two, none of it's about politics. We're going to try to carve a middle way, a way that is more discerning than that. Are there any questions at this time? Please, come on. Feel free. Andrew. Facebook political discussions are usually very productive. I think that's what he said.
Mm-hmm. as opposed to, you know, I like drilling, you know, whatever the
cost. Yeah, that's a good point. Andrew's saying, just to repeat it if you didn't hear, he said that Facebook discussions on politics are always fruitful, and I think that was tongue-in-cheek. I hope it was. I found them to be entirely unfruitful. I've sworn them off. Occasionally, I fall, and my habit comes back to my brain. I don't send that comment like, oh, I should have done that. What did I do that? He's just going to come back and irritate me more. And my blood pressure's going to go. Okay. But Andrew's saying he's mulling over whether it's more fruitful to ask worldview questions. Talk about the deeper worldview questions then, rather than, I like drilling and you don't. That you're right. It goes back to what I was saying about the chasm and the gorge. We've got to sound out the depths. We're going to have to judge the distance before we can ever build a bridge. Thanks for bringing up Facebook, because it reminded me that I wanted to tell you that I do have a website that I run called Dead Reckoning. And you can find it at drbrianmatson.com. That's just drbrianmatson.com. And I have been blogging more frequently during this election season. It's part of my job is to do that. In addition to that, I have a public page on Facebook, Dr. Brian G. Matson. You can find the public page. You can like that page. And what I do throughout the week, as I said, I was a high-end news consumer. I read a lot of material. I read editorials. I read commentary. What I will do is post those links on my public Facebook page. So if you're interested in reading more, if you don't even know where to start, I would love it if you came and you liked my Facebook page and you could read the links that I post throughout the week, and very, very interesting commentary. Those links that I give you will be very short. They'll be less than 140 characters, because I post those from my Twitter account. Which is yet another thing. If you're a Twitter person, follow me on Twitter. I'll follow you back. It'll be fun. We'll have one big party. I'm just getting into Twitter. I never understood it for a long time. And now I've started to realize that it's pretty indispensable, believe it or not. I can find out what's going on in the world real fast. Really fast. In 140 characters or less. But you don't have to get on Twitter, because I post all that to my Facebook page. Okay, any last questions, comments?
Did you say what was on your introduction, that there are political problems or political questions, rather, that the Bible doesn't address?
Yeah.
Could you name one?
Should we drill for natural gas in the Bakken oil shale? Well, you asked me to name one. I just named it. Yeah. What should the tax rate be? I mean, I agree. I'm gonna say this. Worldview is going to inform how are we going to deal with this specific problem. What I'm saying is, it's not the sort of problem I can open up and say, "Oh, look at there. There's the answer to that."
Why does man in the world?
Yeah, we'll get to that. Again, and I think that's a wonderful indication of something. There's a lesson to be learned from that, but I don't think you can just open up to Solomon and say, okay, whatever Solomon did, you know, a percentage point less. Yeah. So, okay, thank you. Why don't we go ahead and close in prayer, and then we'll be done. Father, thanks so much for this opportunity to get together and to talk about these things. Lord, we ask that you would reorient our priorities to more reflect your will and your desires. Help us not to be carried along by every wave of the world, but to be solidly rooted in your word and in your gospel. And Lord, we ask to that end that you would use the means of grace that we're about to participate in, the corporate worship of your people, the hearing of your word, to do exactly that and to reorient us to yourself. We thank you in Jesus' name. Amen.